It truly is the coolest, most unique, most intentional relationship we might have in this capacity, because we just spend so much time on together in settings that are hard, that are critical, that are emotional, that are draining.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and this is Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today, facility dog program coordinators and primary handlers Melanie Weinrich and Bailey Wetzel join us from Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode, we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We Save Each Other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund by making a donation on our website or Facebook page. You can also contribute by making a purchase from the store on our website, buying a t-shirt at bonfire.com, or buying our note cards featuring Rosie and Peaches and our shirts on barkyours.com. Links are in the description. We're also grateful to everyone who designates Rosie Fund as the beneficiary of their eligible purchases through Amazon Smile. Most items are eligible purchases. Your donations and purchases help fund the Rosie Life Starter Kits that make sure these senior and harder-to-adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but here are some popular levels. $30 provides a collar and leash for a Rosie Life Starter Kit dog, and $100 covers their entire kit. You can also support Rosie Fund by downloading, subscribing, rating, and most importantly, sharing Dog Words. Follow us on social media, even if you aren't looking for a dog. Watching and sharing the videos helps our channel gain exposure, bringing awareness to our cause, and giving shelter dogs much-needed attention. Our free Rosie Fund YouTube channel offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. Next time on Dog Words, Peace of Mind Dog Rescue's co-founders Carrie Broker and Monica Rua tell us how they're serving senior dogs and senior people on California's Central Coast. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder-to-adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Today's guests on Dog Words are facility dog program coordinators and primary handlers at Children's Mercy's facility dog program, Melanie Weinrich and Bailey Wetzel. Welcome to Dog Words.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome.
Nice to have you both.
We're happy to be here.
First of all, tell us, what is Children's Mercy's facility dog program?
Children's Mercy's facility dog program is kind of twofold. So we have many different facets of our program, but our ultimate goal is to reach our patients and families and decrease the stress of their hospitalization by incorporating dogs into their treatment. Like I said, our program is twofold. So we have our Pet Pals program, which is a program of volunteers and their pet dogs who are tested according to their temperament once a year, and they are able to see patients and families through visits as well as through events that we have. They are also able to visit with our staff and provide staff support. And then we have our facility dog program coordinators, which is Bailey and myself and a couple other of our colleagues, and our dogs. Our dogs are from an organization in Atlanta, Georgia called Canine Assistance. And our dogs work with us every day and are just integrated into the work that we do, seeing patients and families and also seeing staff.
The volunteers who bring their pet dogs in, you say they are checked once a year. And then you and Bailey have dogs that are specifically trained from this organization in Georgia. So there's different tasks that are being done, different expectations for your dogs than the volunteers' dogs. So I want to dive into both of that. But first, tell me, how did the two of you become primary handlers for this program?
I started, but actually both of us, by nature, are child life specialists. our background being kind of a specific focus on patients and their families and how to make the hospital ultimately easier. Lots of things that kind of go into that, but one of those big things kind of naturally led me to an interest in what else could this look like? How else could we be supporting patients and families? And so from pretty early on in my career, I knew I was interested in dogs and how they could play a role in that. And so kind of how it works with canine assistants is when your hospital is starting a program or adding a dog, they kind of meet you either face-to-face or virtually. COVID threw a big wrench in that for a lot of people. And they actually match your personality to a dog. And so I kind of got into it like from a job I was already doing and then just expanded on that and was able to kind of bring in this whole new world, which is really cool. And like you said, the dogs are different. They're super goal oriented. And this institution is really cool because they train dogs for both facilities, but also individuals. So they grow up learning really cool task oriented things. Like we have pictures of the dog learning how to open doors or how to, you know, do different things. And so it's pretty cool to be able to just use them in a really cool facet here at Children's Mercy with patients all over. And then Melanie.
Yeah, I, similar to what Bailey said, am a child life specialist by trade. And our job as child life specialists is to help patients cope with being here. I used to work on a unit where patients were receiving a lot of rehabilitation services. So they were doing a lot of physical and occupational and speech therapy. And so I became actually a secondary handler to one of our existing facility dogs, Hunter. And I was able to utilize him in my daily interventions with these patients. And I was really kind of seeing how impactful he could be and how he was able to develop such a relationship with them that he encouraged them and in a different way than humans could. And in turn, those patients were able to achieve a lot of their treatment goals, arguably faster because the dog was involved and they were more motivated to do so. And so once I became involved as a secondary handler, I knew that I wanted to be a primary handler. And Children's Mercy is unique in the facility dog world in that all of our primary dog handlers are not attached to an existing job function. All of our primary dog handlers are facility dog program coordinators. And so we are doing all things dog. And so Bailey and I are still certified child life specialists, but we're no longer practicing child life specialists. So we, like I said, do all things dog. So when we're not visiting with patients and families or engaged with staff, we are engaged with our dogs. We are working on our bond with them. We are developing our program. We're doing things like this, talking to you, kind of getting the word out there, drawing more awareness to our program.
Spending way too much time making Instagram reels.
Yes.
You know, all the things
that's that important. Just kind
of go into, yeah, it is.
And
it
I
is.
Do not say that sarcastically. In all sincerity, that is important. Yeah.
Little yeah. this, little of that.
Yes. Any chance we get, we're like, oh, that's program development. You know, and Instagram, that's program development.
So before dogs were being utilized at Children's Mercy, you were both already employed there serving patients.
I was. Bailey was not.
Yeah, I actually, my background is from a different hospital. And so I started there working Lita. And then life happened and I found myself relocating. And so we just got to kind of fit into this mold perfectly. So it's very similar to what I was doing before, just in a different spot. So Lita and I, this will be our second hospital together.
When you got Lita, though, you were already working in this field, not with dogs.
Correct. Yeah. So when I got Lita, so neither I was of you were specialist. Yeah.
So neither of you were dog handlers and somebody said, we need dog handlers in the hospital. You were working in the hospital and somebody said, we're going to do this new therapy, whether you know it's music therapy or we're going to try a new kind of drug or something for what you're doing. Somebody said, we're going to add dogs. And did both of you in your individual cases immediately go, where do I sign up? I can work with dogs?
Of course.
Or was it, I don't know about this, but I guess somebody has to do it.
Yes.
No, I would say for sure the second. Like we both were in positions where we were seeing the impacts made by other people already doing the role or dogs in that field. As a student in school, I actually did some research just about the impact of dogs with their handlers. And so I think we both just knew in very different ways, like this is something really cool and something that we want to be a part of because we just see the bigger picture and what they're capable of and how they benefit patients and families in ways that a human never could.
Yeah, what are some of those ways?
That's a really good question. So For a lot of kids, for most kids, the hospital is a really scary place. There's a lot of fear surrounding pain. There's a lot of fear surrounding the unknown. There's a lot of fear surrounding just the hospital in general. I think the number one fear of children is fear of needles and fear of shots. And so what we know, both of us as child life specialists, is that when kids are stressed, when they're in a state of heightened fear and anxiety, the most important thing for them is to develop a sense of safety and a sense of security, right? If you don't feel safe or if you don't feel secure in your environment, you're not going to thrive. You're not going to be successful. And so that is something, you know, that these dogs can do with just the snap of their fingers. Dogs have so many innate qualities that a human does not possess. You know, it takes a lot of time for a human, human to human, to build trust, right? You need to have a relationship. You need to prove that you're a safe person. And dogs prove that instantly. You know, they're soft, they're warm, they're inviting, they're kind, and they instantly build trust. And so I think that that's kind of what we're getting at. That's one of those ways that they really can just show us all that they can do. You know, we have patients that are, you know, refusing to walk after a big surgery for whatever reason. It might hurt. It might be scary. They might have tubes and drains and things that are unfamiliar to them. And so they're scared to move. But all of a sudden, you know, you walk in with a dog and all of a sudden they want to walk and they're able to take 10 steps when maybe yesterday they only took one. And it's because that dog is motivating them.
Without judgment.
You know, the same thing. Yeah, exactly. No, these dogs are going to
make them exactly where they're at.
Yes.
Exactly where they're at.
Yeah. These dogs are going to accept them for who they are, exactly how they are, without any judgment. And so I think that that speaks volumes.
I think too, when you think about it, like being in the hospital environment is huge. And like a whole nother piece of that is, you know, gaps in family. Like maybe both parents can't be there. Maybe they're missing their friend, you know, based on kind of where they're at developmentally and like what we're looking at that. And there is just so much research on the gaps that these dogs can naturally fill, because it's not, you don't have to have the same interests. You don't have to have like anything.
You don't have to have the same language.
Right. It's just someone that comes in and just meets you exactly where you're at, goes on a walk with you, plays a game of fetch. Maybe they just sleep and snuggle with you. Like, they just truly fill and meet these patients exactly where they're at. And then, like, also families. Like, you know, we work with just moms and dads who are missing work, who are missing their friends, maybe missing their spouse. They're scared for their patient, and then they're also feeling all these things themselves. And so I think that there's just so many layers, and that's what's really cool is, while yes, our days look similar, they're always different, because what we're doing with these dogs is always different based on the interactions that we're having with just everyone. So it's really, really cool.
Yeah. Dogs also, there's lots of studies that show that dogs can decrease pain and anxiety. A lot of times our kids are hooked up to monitors that monitor their heart rate and their oxygen saturations and their blood pressure and different things like that. And watching the monitor as they're petting the dog, you can see sometimes their heart rate will slow down to a more regular rate. Their blood pressure will even out. Their oxygen saturations will level out. They won't be rapidly breathing. And it's because they feel safe. They finally feel safe. And they also have, you know, the opportunity to pet the dog. Just petting the dog is a sensory experience that, again, we cannot provide. And that doesn't benefit them in a way that it does when you're that same movement, repeated movement of feeling something soft and warm and snuggly, just gives everything back to them tenfold.
There's a YouTube channel I watch that has a husky and a husky mix, but the husky, she is the sweetest dog, and they have two little boys, look like they're probably 6 and 8, but then a newborn. And so we've been watching for the last year as the husky, because a husky mix is just, she's just wild. Just excited about everything. Everything amps her up. But the husky, Millie, is so sweet with the baby and will lay next to the baby. And you can see that the baby, who's almost a year old now, but over the last year, just instinctively wants to hold the fur, wants to pet the dog, and you can just see it calm. And there's multiple videos of the baby being fussy, and then Millie will come running into the room and just like poke her head between the slats on the baby bed, and the baby just immediately relaxes and focuses on the dog. I don't think that's unusual. I think that interaction, that response is just in our DNA to want that from a dog, and in a dog's DNA to want to give that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I think we could give you example after example of how these dogs make a difference with babies in cribs who are under one, of teenagers, of young adults, of their parents, grandparents, cousins. You know, I think we could give you example after example of how age is truly just a number. And, you know, for someone who feels connected or likes dogs, it doesn't matter. It's the presence alone. And then what we do on top of that, you know, whether, you know, we go in with a specific goal or we don't, you know, just truly everyone can benefit in some capacity. And we hear that all the time. Like, I had a doctor just last week be like, this is the 10 seconds of dopamine I needed for my day. Like, just petting Lita waiting for the elevator, you know? So I think it's just, their impacts just go beyond kind of what I think we even realize sometimes, which I think is also super empowering.
Yeah. I think it's really cool too, to both of us have backgrounds in child development. And so a lot of times, you know, if we're seeing a baby or a toddler, a lot of people are like, well, I don't really quite understand like why they would be, you know, a priority for you. They don't benefit as much as, you know, the 5-year-old who's having a really hard time, or that teen that's really lonely. And what those people don't know is that, you know, babies, they're in the sensory motor stage of development. They are learning about the world and their environment through their senses, right? So what they see, what they hear, what they taste, what they touch, what they smell, and who better to give them a huge sensory experience than a dog, right?
Right.
Where they can touch something soft. They can
maybe feel the wet, cold nose.
Yes. You know, they can see. Yeah. They can see someone, something on their level, you know, that just really is such a positive developmental experience for them. When, you know, infants in the hospital are the most at risk for not meeting their developmental milestones, right? Because they're stuck in a crib, they're not in their typical environment where they need to thrive. And so bringing a dog into an infant is arguably, you know, something that is going to benefit them more than anyone really even realizes.
Yeah, it's a new stimulus. They get to see plenty of people in scrubs and masks. And here they get to see a furry creature that is not going to poke them with anything, not going to measure anything, is just going to love them. What great stimulation. You mentioned the doctor who appreciated getting the dopamine fix of just 10 seconds with Lita while waiting for the elevator. Are there more formal interactions with staff other than just happening to pass the dog while you're waiting for the elevator?
It's a great question, and something that I think in healthcare we're always talking about. You know, the last 2 years have been really hard, I think, on everyone in the world. And then I think specifically in healthcare. And I think even before that, it was always hard. We're doing hard jobs. We see hard things. We see things that are just kind of emotionally draining at times. And so I think that it's a great question. And we actually have here at Children's Mercy a designated space for employee wellness. And so we have a dog that does a lot of scheduled visits, but then also, you know, we are also recognizing like, hey, this population could really benefit today. You know, I work in a critical care setting. One of my coworkers called me and said, hey, we're having a really hard day. And so I just took Lita and we spent some extra time at nurses' stations. And so we're doing more intentional time where we're there for the staff. But I always tell the staff too, I'm like, if I'm not running something, please ask. She is just as much here for you guys as she is the patients and the families, because we're all in this together and this environment isn't easy. And it's true, like just 2 seconds petting her, or just even sometimes seeing them when we dress them up in costumes, like it's just enough for people. So we try and be really intentional about supporting our staff. We do like little holiday cards that we can just pass out, but then also just those moments where we can go identify a specific, you know, like maybe it's the OR staff, right? The dogs don't go to the OR. So we do a specific time for them where they get to come to a conference room and all wash their hands and they get to pet the dogs. It's just so fun for them. And so I think anything we can do to give back in that way, we always try to do so.
Do you ever feel like the dogs are sometimes at their limit, that they need a break, that they're stressed?
Absolutely. That's something too that I feel like we're constantly educating people about. And I think that that's a big reason as to why Children's Mercy, our program, is structured the way it is.
So you have an otter handler who brings in otters for the dogs.
Exactly. Exactly.
De-stress.
But so, yeah, I think, you know, also just like humans, working in healthcare is really hard. And I think that what people don't realize is that these dogs are, they're more than just someone to pet. They are absorbing all the stress in the environment. They are absorbing all the anxiety in a room. They are taking on all of it.
And yeah, they're so naturally empathetic. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They also are doing so much brain work. I mean, these dogs, when they are in a room, they basically shut off their sensory receptors, and that's them working. You know, yeah, they are in work mode. They are not, you know, responding to the beeps of the machine. They are not smelling the pills on the table. They are not, you know, reacting to the door opening. They are fully zoned in on the patient. And so that takes a lot of brain work for them. I tell my patients all the time, like, have you ever taken a really hard test, you know, and afterwards you have a headache or you're super, super tired. You feel like you need a nap. Like, that is how Jellybean is my dog's name. Mm-hmm. That is how Jellybean feels, you know, after a day of work. And so I feel like we are really intentional, and our other primary handlers are as well, about making sure that we have designated break times for them. Like right now, they're both kind of sleeping, snoozing behind us because they've had long days of work. And I think that ultimately, you know, we want these dogs to be able to work for many years, right? And so just like humans, we don't want them to burn out due to stress and anxiety. We want them to love their job so much that they want to come back every day. And so how can we, as handlers and as moms to these dogs, you know, make sure that they are having fun, that they love being here? And part of how we do that is just giving them time throughout the day to be a dog, right? Yeah. To get out of work mode, to have a break.
To play with each other and roll around in the office with toys. And
they're still a dog.
They're still a dog. And people ask that, like, are they tired when they get home? And I'm always like, yes, but in a different way. Like when Lita, and Jellybean, when they have those vests on and they're in work mode, they know they're in work mode. They're so stinking smart and they know that. And when those vests come off, they know they're not in work mode. Mm-hmm. So she'll take a nap, but when we get home, it's game on. I want to play with my dad and I'll play with my brothers and I want to run around and I want to be a normal dog. So yes, she's tired, but like also she's tired in a different way, because it's kind of like when we're tired at work, but then we go home and hang out with our families, we do that, and we have like a different set of energies. It's kind of how they are too.
You can work hard all week, but that doesn't mean you don't want to play golf on the weekend.
Right.
You've earned it. I need that release. I need to do that thing that is in my DNA.
Yeah.
And playing is in a dog's DNA.
Yep.
It's a great point that, it was a great point you made that, yes, they're working, they're on the clock, they know it, because the training they go through, yes, they're selected for temperament. This is a dog that's appropriate for what we're going to train this dog to do. But it's not a matter of finding the right peg for the right hole and you just plug it in. It's like, there, that's a fit. It's done. It has to be the right temperament. And then you have to train it to resist its instincts. All those things you just listed, that a dog wants to poke its nose into this cup that's next to the kid and wants to lick this pill to see what that is and wants to jump up and wants to play the blanket that's on the kid, wants to play tug of war, all this thing that a dog naturally should want to do. But it knows it's on the clock and resists those urges and just channels all its energy into this single point of focus, which is being empathetic.
Exactly. Yeah.
That has to be exhausting. Like doing a podcast almost, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It just has to just completely drain them to have that kind of focus for that long. What is their shift?
So they work the same shift as we do. So Bailey and I both work Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 4 p.m. And they both either have or will have in the near future secondary handlers. And so they split their time between us, their primary handlers, and working with their secondary handlers as well. And so it's a lot to balance, you know, for us and for them to make sure that they're getting working and being successful, but also getting their breaks. and making sure that they're accessible to patients and staff. And to your point, you know, I think that that's why we love canine assistants so much, the organization where they were born and where they were raised and where they were taught, is because the way that they were taught is so much different than the average training. And even the average training, so to speak, for a facility dog or a service dog. And there's a couple unique things about canine assistants, one of which is that they make the decision pretty early on in their life of what track they're going to go, whether they're going to become a dog for an individual or whether they're going to become a hospital facility dog. And that's based on a variety of factors. And the other thing is that the canine assistants weigh everything we do with these dogs in terms of training, and their schooling is what's called bond-based. So our dogs don't know any commands. Some of them know some commands because we've taught them some.
As they're like primary handlers.
Yeah. But they don't, they, you know, if I tell Jellybean to sit, she just looks at me like, what does that mean?
You sit.
And you would think, you know, for a facility dog, for a dog that works in the hospital, you know, you would think that.
I would think they would
know commands. And so everything that we do with them is intuitive in nature, which I think is really cool because it allows for our dogs to not be robots, right? They get to still be dogs. And even when they're in a patient room and they're on, you know, we know that ultimately they're dogs. And sometimes, you know, they're like, all right, mom, I'm over this. I'm out of here. And we, as their handlers, like, again, everything we do is intuitive in nature. And we're like, okay, it's time for us to go. You know, she's telling us that it's time. And so we move on from that.
I love that the intuition goes both ways, because if a dog has a set of commands, that could lead to you forcing things.
Right.
Sit. No, sit, sit. Stay, you know, up, on, trying to get them, instead of just letting them figure it out and you reading them, recognizing, well, instead of me forcing this dog that doesn't want to sit and stay to sit and stay, maybe I should read this language that we need to go.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's important for us to find, you know, the right handlers, the right group of individuals who are able to shift their mindset a little bit to be able to really understand what these dogs need, because it is really hard. You know, I've only always had dogs that are command-based, and not that that's wrong or not that that's not okay. It's just not how we do it here.
It's a different purpose.
It's a different purpose. And it's more about a relationship. Like Bailey said, it's more about that mutual trust than us controlling them. And so, you know, I think naturally people are like, do you want to shake? Do you shake? Do you do tricks? And she does. She's very smart. These dogs are very smart. They do so many different things, but
they're not there to entertain.
The relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. They've learned them through the bond and trust, knowing my mom or my, you know, I always say, I'm like, I'm Lee's mom, right? My mom's not going to ask me something that like, isn't safe or okay, or isn't like in my best interest. And so it's really that, like, I would never ask Lita to do something that was outside of her limits. Cause I know her, I've been working with her for 2.5 years, and these dogs have strengths. They have things that they do, you know, really well, or maybe they are more scared. Like, I love Lita. Lita is intelligent. She will do a load of tricks, but she's so scared to ride on a moving hospital bed. She doesn't like it. I think she feels out of control. And I know that about her. We've practiced, we've done the things. I know it's not her strength. I'm not going to ask her or put her in a situation that isn't in the best interest of her. And she knows that. And so then when I ask her to do another task where I'm like, hey, why don't you want to lay down right here at this patient? She's going to do that naturally, because she's like, my mom has my best interests. As you know, and she has mine. Like, you know, it's just kind of, it's crazy. It's truly a partnership and a relationship. I mean, the other thing you have to think about is Melanie and I spend more time with our dog working than we do like anyone else, like any other human, any other person.
Even our significant others.
Yeah, right.
Like, I spend more time with this dog than I do with anyone.
With anyone. And so it truly is the coolest, most unique, most intentional relationship we might have in this capacity, because we just spend so much time on together in settings that are hard, that are critical, that are emotional, that are draining. And so I think because of that, we can tell, like, yeah, maybe one day I see this many patients with Lita, but they're all really fun and they're all more like taking walks and playing fetch. But we might see two kids in a really intense critical care setting, and like, she is equally as drained from those two things. And I and her mom am watching that, because she is taking on all the emotions of what's around her. So it's just, I think it just sets everyone up for success that way. And just healthy. It's healthy for them.
Yeah, I like that in that environment instead of just marching them from room to room, having them do their little show. That's not what this is about.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, and I think that we value that as their handlers. It's just, I think we do a lot of education, not through anybody, like fault of anyone. I think it's just, you know, people see a dog and they're like, oh, dog, you know, like, can you do this? Can you do that? How many, you know, can you go see my kid? Can you, you know, all of the things that people just get excited to see a dog. And what we know is there's so much value to what these dogs do. And it's not your average dog that's going to go room to room and let everybody pet her. You know, we are really pushing them to be in the right spaces with the right patients. My old boss used to say this phrase, like, right person, right place, mm-hmm. right work. And that is what we as their primary handlers are assessing for them. And there are times where we say, you know, I'm so sorry, we can't come visit if it's just a patient that is wanting to say hi to a dog versus that patient that has true goals that are going to
benefit just even furthermore.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, yes, these dogs are fun and they're here to do fun visits, but they also are here to be goal specific for a purpose and treatment. And I think when we're talking about our Pet Pals program and we're talking about kind of our facility dogs, that's ultimately probably the biggest difference. And it's not that they can't do goal oriented things. In fact, some of them work in our rehab gym and help patients be motivated to do things both inpatient and outpatient. But because of the training that the four full-time dogs here have, they are able to do a lot more goal specific interventions with different disciplines. Maybe it's just us. Maybe it's us in physical therapy. Maybe it's us in speech. Maybe it's us in psychology. Maybe it's us and a physician. And so it's just more goal oriented, which I think just enriches kind of what their purpose is. Like, yes, they're fun and they can do a drive-by fun visit and we do it. For sure. But we also are going to always prioritize a specific goal with a patient over that.
It's allocation of resources.
Exactly.
Let's use this and just, we can't just give morphine to everybody who's in pain.
Right. And it just shows too that our Pet Pals program is so robust and we're so lucky. We have amazing volunteers that have been coming. You know, they were here prior to us having any full-time facility dogs, you know, so we've had dogs at Children's Mercy for gosh, over 20 years now. And so
which is incredible.
Yeah. We value them so much. And what's really cool is that because we have such a robust volunteer program and a robust facility dog program is that there is a space for both. There is a space for the social visits and there is a space for the goal-oriented visits. And of course, we all cross-cover each other.
And
yes, they coexist for sure. But I think that the focus overall also lends to the different facets of our program, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you have RNs, you have LPNs, you have nurses' aides, and you can't have the RNs doing everything.
Exactly.
There's something right. that this is something the nurses' aide can and should do. And let's make sure the RN is where the RN can apply their advanced training.
Exactly.
Your dogs have advanced training.
Yes. And it just amplifies, like Bailey said, it just amplifies our resources, right? We're able to reach more kids. We're able to see more patients. We're able to see more parents. One of our volunteers frequents the fetal health center where there's moms who are on bed rest, you know, waiting to deliver high risk babies. And so that's really special, you know, and that's something that maybe we don't have the bandwidth to do every day of the week, but this volunteer, you know, she has a really strong passion for that. And the staff and the patients and the families, they just love them. And so there is a space for both. It just helps us grow our program.
So how do you and a dog end up in a patient's room? Does a doctor say, I'm prescribing 5 minutes of Lita time twice a day? Or do you just find yourself where you need to be?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I was like, it's not always super black and white.
Yeah, so we have those of us that are primary handlers, we kind of have our quote unquote home bases, so to speak. So for example, Jelly Bean and I are stationed primarily on the fourth floor. It's Fort Henson is what it's called. And that's our hematology oncology floor. We spend a lot of time there. That's our primary focus. And so for me, each morning I have a list of the census, which has information of what patients are on the unit, what what their diagnosis is, what their treatment goals are. And so I kind of self-identify patients for myself and for Jelly Bean based on my assessment of what's going on that day from reading that unit census. And then I also work collaboratively with the psychosocial care team on the floor to determine who are the priorities for that day. And Bailey's similar in her areas that she's stationed at. And then outside of that, you know, we do have a couple of floors that are not designated with a dog and a staff member because, of course, we can't meet that request. I think if it were up to us and if it were up to the staff at Children's Mercy, I think we would have a dog, you know, in every clinic, every floor, every location. But that's just not possible. So we are referral based outside of that. And so we have, you know, an electronic referral form where people can place appropriate referrals. And then that gets funneled to us. And then we either, you know, take care of those referrals or we refer out to our volunteers. So there's kind of a process there for sure. And the tricky part is that there is a lot of criteria that a patient has to meet before even getting a dog in their room. So they have to have no fever for 24 hours. Let's just make sure that they're not at risk of being contagious. Same with if they're on isolation precautions or if they're contagious, have an infection, we want to make sure that we don't visit with them, not so much to compromise them, but to compromise potentially other children or to transfer an infection from room to room. So we're really mindful about that. The other thing is we have to make sure that the patients are not afraid of dogs, right? Because sometimes patients are. And so we want to be mindful of that. Exactly. And so if we're self-identifying and we're not really paying attention, and we could enter a room potentially where a patient's scared, and then we've just induced more trauma and fear into an environment that's already really scary. So we think about that. We also think about, do they have allergies to dogs? And then lastly, if all of those things kind of check out, then we contact their legal guardian and just get a verbal consent from them to make sure that it is okay for them to engage with our dogs. Kind of all of that has to be in place before we can even enter the room, which I think helps us. Otherwise, we truly would not be able to keep up with the demand because the demand is so high.
Well, I think that speaks volumes too, because people of all facets in this environment and in this space recognize and have seen and understand the benefit. And so they're like, I want this kid. And so it's just kind of like, it's a compliment, right? It's saying like, everyone knows the difference these dogs can make. Let's just make sure it's in the best interest of the dog or best interest of the patient in that moment. And like, we're always like looking to expand our services. And so we are really relying on maybe it's physical therapists in the outpatient gym to say, hey, this patient would really benefit. What can we do to make that happen? Let's then have a conversation. You know, I think we're always looking at new ways to meet the needs of patients and families. And so I think that's what's also really cool is that we have, you know, the capacity and the leadership that are saying like, yeah, let's ask more questions about that, or let's explore that, or let's, you know, see what that could look like. And so I think it's really cool in that way too. So everyone kind of sees and says, hey, this patient could benefit. And then we just do the back work and make it work. We can make it work.
The Pet Partners program, that's what it's called, Pet Partners.
Pet Pals,
the program with the volunteers. Can you tell me how someone gets involved with that?
Right now, we're not accepting any new volunteers just because we kind of COVID threw a huge wrench in our volunteer programming. We had, actually our dogs were suspended from the hospital for almost a year, if not longer. And so that really, we kind of had to shut down our Pet Pals program at the time temporarily. And we're just getting to a place where we have almost all of our existing volunteers back in the swing of things. Things look a lot different now because we used to do group programming and now we still can't do group programming at the hospital. And so we do things a lot differently. And so we're currently not onboarding anyone. But if we were to be onboarding volunteers, how people would go about applying to be a volunteer in our program would be to fill out like an info sheet on our external website at childrensmercy.org. There is a facility dog program page with a link to a Pet Pals page, and they could fill out an interest form there. That would get funneled straight to us, and then we would reach out to them and start the process from there.
I will link to the facility dog program page in the description of this episode, and people can get more information about the facility dog program, but also be able to then check that every few months to see when you're onboarding some more volunteers and be ready to fill out the form. I would also encourage listeners to check other hospitals.
Yes, yes. Yeah. There are so many, especially local in Kansas City, there's so many hospitals that have pet therapy programs, volunteer programs. And I know this because a lot of our volunteers, they're volunteer just amazing. They volunteer at multiple places. And so I do know this, but.
And so do assisted care facilities, nursing homes.
Oh, yeah.
That have a very open policy that depending on the facility, you bring your dog in and someone from the staff says, oh, that's a nice dog. They seem well-behaved. Yeah, go ahead and walk it through. And anyone who's interested can come out of their room or they post in the common area. So there's lots of ways to access helping with your dog volunteering beyond the Pet Pals program at Children's Mercy. But if you can participate in that, once you guys start onboarding more volunteers, what a great way to share the gift that your dog has.
Yes, absolutely. We would be nothing without our Pet Pals program. They are, they are truly so helpful to us. And we just are filled with gratitude when we think about the amount of interventions that they've provided and their flexibility. And we've had to kind of really shift our entire way we do the Pet Pals program. So
we have big goals for 2023.
Yes,
we do. So stay tuned, check that website. And if you want to be there, just let us be patient with us.
Then follow the link and put a reminder on your calendar, like a recurring reminder every quarter or every month to check the page. Takes you 10 seconds. And at some point, you're going to click on the page and go, oh, yay, there's a big announcement. There's a big goal that I will help them achieve. Also, you guys can let me know. And I will update the description for this episode that will say, click on this link that will have whatever the announcement is. I will link to the announcement. I will update the link for this episode and get the word out there. And whenever, whatever this is, happens, I will announce on Dog Words that it's time to click on the link for the facilities dog program, the Pet Pals program, or geez, I'm just so intrigued. I can't wait to find out what's going to happen. So we're all excited. Yeah. Melanie Weinrich and Bailey Wetzel, primary handlers with Children's Mercy's Facility Dog Program, your Facility Dog Program coordinators. This is just such an exciting program, and I know that you derive a great deal of satisfaction seeing the progress that children can make in their recovery just by having your dogs there. I don't want our listeners to take for granted the training and hard work that the two of you do. We talk about selecting the dog for temperament and then training them to resist their instincts and stay focused and work hard. You guys have to have a lot of training too in order to leverage what the dogs are offering to us. So thank you for your hard work in getting to this point with your training and what you are doing. And of course, thank you for being guests on Dog Words.
Thank you for having us.
We really loved it.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you to Facility Dog Program coordinators and primary handlers Melanie Weinrich and Bailey Wetzel for joining us from Children's Mercy Hospital. Use the links in the description to learn more about the Facility Dog Program, the Pet Pals program, especially if you want to participate when they resume onboarding, and to follow Children's Mercy on social media. Next time on Dog Words, Peace of Mind Dog Rescue's co-founders Carrie Broker and Monica Rua tell us how they're serving senior dogs and senior people on California's Central Coast. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission. Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Join Laurel and Sasha as they explore new music and delve into the inspiration behind each work as hosts of Sound Currents on 91.9 Classical KC. Click on the Sound Current links in the description for more information. Go to rosiefund.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dog Words. This helps us with sponsorships, then Rosie Fund can help more dogs.
Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions via the contact form at rosiefund.org, and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dog Words podcast. Thank you for listening to Dog Words, and remember, we save each other.